Welcome, everyone, to episode 331 of the NBA Podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we are going to finish up our free agent series. We are going to look at the center market, and there are a ton of good centers on the free agent market this offseason. Before we get into that, a reminder that you can find us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews, and we're being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter, at Spreaker. Joining me today, as always, is my very enthusiastic to discuss centers co-host, Morten Jensen. Mort, how's it going?
It's going well, because we are about to dig into Christian Wood.
Yeah, I like that you panicked for a second, because you were like, oh my god. Did we forget to discuss Christian Wood on the Power Forwards podcast? And I rest assured, Christian Wood played 53% of his minutes at center this year. So by the rules that we established early on in this exercise, where we're just basing positions based on Basketball Reference play-by-play data, Christian Wood, we saved the best for last. With that said, I don't think, as much as you love Christian Wood, I don't think we could call him the best center on the free agent market this offseason. I think we have to start with the guy who might not be a free agent, but has the option to become one, Andre Drummond.
Yeah, I mean, so here's the thing. I agree with you, but over the past couple of months, ignoring coronavirus vacation here, he looked pretty, what's the kind word of saying this? Disengaged, I think, is the proper term.
Drummond
couldn't give an F is probably a better, more accurate term.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He was very, very checked out for a good portion of the season, but I don't totally blame him for that. And I think with the right motivation, he'll actually... I mean, he's good, right? Like, he's one of the best rebounders. He's led the league in rebounds four times now, including this season. Isn't going to give you much offensively. He's not going to hit a ton of threes, although he did. I mean, he only played 8 games in Cleveland, but he did attempt 1.8 threes per game when he was there. He shot 4 of 14 from deep.
He's next.
I mean, I would love for Ben Simmons to develop that kind of a trigger.
Yeah, but let's stay in reality here, Brian.
Right. Well, I'm just saying, I mean, over his first 7 seasons, he hit 10 threes over 542 games. He plays 8 games in Cleveland and hits 4. I mean, at least he's shown that he is willing to take them. He's not a great 3-point shooter by any means, but if he adds that to his game, then this is a very different discussion about Andre Drummond. Even still, great rebounder, good shot blocker. Like, he's going, I don't think he's a max player at this point, just given what's happened with centers over the past few years and given how they've become devalued, considering he's not the offensive unicorn skill set that you would want. But this guy, you know, he would be, in a normal offseason, at least $20 million a year.
Right.
With that said, he has a $28.75 million player option for the 2020-2021 season. Do you think he is picking up that option, or do you think he'd become a free agent this offseason?
Oh, no. I think he and his agent are picking that up immediately.
Yeah, I would agree. I think even in a normal offseason, if the cap were supposed to come in at $115 million as projected, I still think he should pick it up. And I wrote about it pre-hiatus at Forbes. Just like the market's just not going to be there just because so few teams have cap space, and now those 6 or whatever teams will probably have even less cap space depending on where the cap falls. With that said, Mort, if he did opt out, who do you think might be interested in him?
Well, I mean, there aren't really many teams on the market with money and right, who have like a glaring need for him. You know, Atlanta was one of those teams that we brought up multiple times, and they did have interest in Drummond, but then they traded for Clint Capella, who is just so much cheaper. So that basically leaves, what, Charlotte? And a return to Cleveland, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, Detroit's... No, they traded him for peanuts. That's not going to happen. Miami, no. They have Adebayo. They're not going to commit their Giannis money to Andre Drummond.
Right.
Phoenix has DeAndre Ayton. No. So, yeah, I mean, it leaves Cleveland, the Knicks. Please, no. for the love of God, unless they're really just going to build a team of nothing but power forwards and centers. I don't see that happening either, but maybe. They're always the wild card on the table, so I guess we can't rule them out completely.
Picking up Drummond and DeRozan, right? That's what we've been discussing in private for a long time now.
Yeah, that was the double max plan. They thought they were going to get Kyrie and Durant, but instead it's going to be DeRozan and Drummond.
I'd love that so much.
That would be so depressingly Knicks. But no, I think Charlotte does seem to be the one team with a need at center and the cap space to actually make it difficult for Cleveland to retain Drummond if he does indeed opt out.
Right.
Would you like his fit there with the Hornets?
So it's pretty theoretical because we haven't really seen Drummond with those two type of guards like Devontae Graham and Terry Rozier. Reggie Jackson, I suppose you can categorize as a penetrating point guard. Derrick Rose as well, but Rose, you know, it's twilight of his career coming off the bench instead. Reggie Jackson often injured, not an explosive athlete by any stretch. I think it would be interesting to see, you know, that dynamic in Charlotte, where you have a Devontae Graham who can break down defenses and really is a very, very firm and stable passer and playmaker. And then you have this scoring guard in Terry Rozier who has these moments where he just is relentless at attacking the rim. I want to see how that affects Drummond, because if you have perimeter players who can suck in defenses and basically occupy a lot of attention, that is going to lead to more open opportunities if you're the guy in the dunker spot. So maybe by just having those two guards who are very, very competent, at least compared to what Detroit has had over the last few years, that could maybe be a very positive asset for Drummond.
Yeah. Although I wonder if you could make a similar argument with Cleveland, where, you know, they have Colin Sexton, who really came into his own this year, Darius Garland, even Kevin Porter Jr. Like, they have some nice guards and young guards and wings who are going to continue to develop. Having a pick and roll big like Drummond should only help facilitate their development, at least offensively. And he can clean up some mistakes on defense too. So I think of his two realistic options this offseason, either way he's going to be playing with some young promising guards.
Yeah, I think for him that has to be the priority. I think he has to speak to his agent and say, you know what, wherever we go is so crucial that I actually have a fully capable playmaking guard or a playmaking wing alongside me who can get me the ball in the good spots. Because when you look at Detroit, that guy hasn't been around for what, years? Since Chauncey left?
Right. I mean, it was like Blake Griffin was the guy who needed to do that. And he filled that role well.
Well, yes, he did for a power forward or for a big, of course, but you need someone quick on their feet, someone who can break down a defense. Basically, everything that the Philadelphia 76ers do not have at this point.
Right, yeah. I do not think Andre Drummond will be coming in the Sixers this offseason. Right. Here's my question with Drummond. And I don't want to frame it like this, but, you know, like, I don't want to ask, is he a winning player or can you win with him? Because I think you can win with anyone. It's, can you devote the amount of resources it would take to sign him and win with him that way? Like, is he a guy who you want to be spending $20+ million on every year? And can you build a winning team around that?
So this answer comes with the caveat that we're getting locked in motivated Drummond.
Okay.
And if we do, yes, I would be willing to pay $20 million a year. Absolutely. I think Drummond, and a motivated one at that, is a game changer. That's the guy who chases 20 rebounds a game, but does it without sacrificing, you know, the greater good of the team. Like, he'll basically just get 20. When I say chase, I don't mean that he goes into the NBA game saying, hey, I want to get 20 rebounds. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying in the flow of the game, he'll end up with that just because of his sheer acumen on that end. But I think for him, when he loafs around and when he disengages, you know, if we have to put a contractual value on a motivated Drummond, like let's say 20 million, then a demotivated Drummond is like, what, 8, 9 million tops?
Yeah, right, like a mid-level exception.
Completely.
Yeah, I mean, I do wonder if you can, like, I agree with you that he is a game changer. I do wonder if you can build a team with him as, if he is being paid as a, not even a max guy, but like a near max guy. I think it's going to make it tricky to build a championship caliber team around him.
Mm.
But, I mean, in the case of, especially in Cleveland, since Sexton and Garland are on their rookie deals for a couple more years, that's less of an issue. So, I mean, if I'm Cleveland, I think I probably want him to opt in just so you don't have to deal with the chance of Charlotte driving up the bidding. But, I mean, honestly, if the cap falls far enough, it might behoove Cleveland for him to opt out because the market just might not be there and they might be able to lock him in to a pretty reasonable deal for the next couple of years.
Yeah. No, for sure. Because he's not going to get max money, so the contract is not going to be flexible in that sense, as a max as a max contract would be. But I wonder, again, it all boils down to what the cap is going to settle at, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But I wonder what is a reasonable deal.
Yeah, like I would feel good at like 4 years, $80 million, but I don't think he would. Okay. I think he would want much more than that.
Yeah, you're probably right. And I would even feel a little bit squeamish about that because I don't know what kind of Drummond I'm getting.
Right. Yeah, he's, I mean, this is all hypothetical because I do think he opts in, but it's an interesting thought experiment just in case he surprises us and decides to opt out.
Right.
Let's go into a guy more who is definitely going to hit the free agent market, and that is Montrezl Harrell. Who we touched on, I don't remember what episode we touched on him, but we did talk about him somewhat recently. In the Clippers by Felicia, preemptive by Felicia, which turned out they were actually very preemptive because it sounds like we're actually getting a season back. Montrez is a guy who, I think I said this on that episode, he's a guy where if it's any team other than the Clippers paying him, I'm immediately going to be nervous about that contract. But let's say, for whatever reason, he decides to leave the Clippers this summer, or this offseason, I should say. Where do you think he might fit?
Well, first and foremost, I make that mistake every single time I'm about to write, like, in the summer. I do that at Forbes all the time.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, corrected
the
myself.
The rest of the year.
Yeah. So again, like, not a lot of money are on the table. We're going to pick back up on the Hornets, I think. Much like we bring up Atlanta as a landing spot for basically every shooting guard and every wing, I kind of want to duplicate that with big men because they need one.
Yeah.
They need one who is a legitimate option for them and not someone who just comes in and clocks the lane and does small things here and there, like, you know, respect to Cody Seller for having a career year where he averaged 17 and 11 per 36. That's all good and well, but I'm not going anywhere with Cody Seller as my best big man. Sorry, Cody, but that's just not happening. I mean, I'm going to need someone good, someone who can really affect the flow of a game, either be it, you know, through energy, you know, through point production, defensive acumen, whatever it might be. So Harrell at least gives me the offense, he gives me the energy, he doesn't really give me the rebounding, but he does give me a defensive presence, at least when the system around him fits.
Right. So that's the next question. Would Charlotte be that kind of a place?
I don't know how much money Harrell is going to get, so I'm just going to say that's going to be the $55 million answer, probably.
Yeah. Harrell and Drummond to me are similar in the sense that I think they would, in a normal offseason, they would get a lot more money than I would be comfortable paying either player.
Right.
Like, I don't think... Like, if you're the Hornets, do you think Montrezl Harrell could be your starting center?
Yeah, I mean, at least a starter. I don't know if they want to play him at center or they want to try him out at the four because mm-hmm. he is 6'7". I wouldn't right. have a problem with it necessarily. The league is going small anyway. As long as you can produce, then it doesn't really matter if you can affect the game the way you want to. Harrell's lack of size is almost an asset at this point because teams are throwing out like 6'8" centers. So right. for him being mobile and agile and, you know, being able to cover a lot of ground quickly, I don't necessarily see that as being a major problem for them to start him at center if they do. And he would just be an instant upgrade over basically every other option they have. So yes, of course, they should start him at either the four or the five. He should get instant started minutes, especially on a Hornets team. Now, if he signed with someone who was really good, obviously that role changes. And even right. if he signed with Atlanta, who is currently not good at all, you could make the argument that he wouldn't crack the starting lineup either. Like, so this becomes yeah. one of those situations where he has to look at the right fit, he has to look at the right role, and you know those things, when you look at those things and you add them up, there's only one team that's being spit out on the other end, and that's the Clippers. So I feel pretty confident that he's going to return. I would be surprised if he chose to leave. And if he does, with the mindset of, oh, hey, I can make it somewhere else, all the pressure is going to be on him. Like, not some mm-hmm. of it, all of it.
Right. No, I completely agree. I think he's... I don't want to call... Like, he's a scheme-dependent player, but that's going to downplay his talent. I mean, I'm not saying he would be terrible anywhere else.
Right.
But I think on the Clippers, they are built to maximize what he does well, and they can hide some of his deficiencies better than if he goes to Charlotte and becomes a starter. I mean, yeah, like, sure, his lack of size, if he's the center, whatever, play him next to Zeller. I don't care what positions they play offensively. I think, you know, the fact that he's not a great shooter and won't really give you much. He hit zero threes this year. He's hit five threes in his career over five seasons and just doesn't take a ton of those shots, doesn't really shoot well from even more than 10 feet away from the basket. So you're going to have to play him close to the hoop on offense. That's fine, but you better have a three-point shooter complimenting him, and Zeller can be that, so that's okay. But, you know, I just don't know if a Zeller Montrez front court is necessarily going to get you to the playoffs.
Well, I mean, like, is that the final front court, though?
Oh, probably not, but I mean, who would... I don't know enough about prospects coming in like a year or two down the line.
No, but I mean, like, next year. I don't think we can look at it as this year as... So NBA teams function this way. Like, they identify a guy that they want who they think can be a key piece. And mm-hmm. then maybe they have a vision about, okay, we have to pair him with this type of player. But that player might not be available the first year. But that doesn't mean they throw out the whole plan and just go, oh, okay, because we can't assemble our dream team, you know, right off the bat, that means we're just going to you know, trash it all. You know, then they get the guy in and they probably live with the results in the first year, and then when next summer rolls around, that's where you make a move. I could see them just basically saying, hey, if we can get Montrez, that's an asset for us. That's a big win. We get him in. We have two guards who can get him the ball, who can at least push the tempo. That's going to help him. And then next year, when Cody Seller's contract is off the books, that's when we go in and we find someone who fits his game. I could see that scenario play out.
Yeah, I guess I just wonder whether Montrez is that type of player who you, like, design a multi-year scheme around, or who you say, this guy's going to be an asset. Because if you sign him to a big deal and he doesn't play well, he loses a lot of that luster.
That is true. That is definitely the big concern.
Yeah. So I agree with you that the Clippers should want him back, and he should want to be back with the Clippers because... You know, the Clippers are one of the leading championship contenders this year. There's no reason to think they won't be next year with Kawhi and Paul George still under contract. Again, I don't see why Kawhi or Paul George would opt out in 2021, even though both have the opportunity to do so. So next season, assuming health at least, they're going to be right back toward the top of the West, having the chance to compete for championships. I mean, I would think that's more appealing than going to a Hornets team and being like, we're going to be the plucky eighth seed.
Yeah.
And that's our ceiling. We're going to maybe get swept by the Bucks in the first round.
Also lost in this is, you know, Kawhi and Paul George are not Kyrie Irving.
Yeah.
You know, they're not guys who talk a lot. Sure, there were some rumblings earlier this season about some Clippers players, you know, getting a little bit frustrated with the whole change in, you know, in getting superstars in. But you know what? I mean, they won. They were one of the best teams in the damn league, a championship favorite even. So, I mean, if that's a problem for some guys, then those guys shouldn't be on a team with that championship aspirations. I'm sorry, but I mean, if you can't look above yourself and go, hey, we actually have a chance to win a championship. Like, if you are already getting the disease of Moore before you win a ring,
right?
That's not great. I mean, that's a clear sign of that team being, you know, should at least consider the option of going, hey, maybe you should get the hell out of town.
Right. And if my memory serves correctly, Montrez was one of the players who was somewhat vocal about that earlier in the
year. Yes, I believe he was.
Yeah. But I do wonder, I mean, some of that might have been frustration with their inconsistency. Some of it, I'm sure, was, hey, I'm in a contract year. I need to put up numbers so I can get paid this summer. When he thought it would be in the summer and not the fall.
Right. I mean, he did put up numbers.
Yeah, right. I mean, he averaged a career high, almost 19 points, 7 rebounds a game. Like, shot worse. I mean, shot a career low 58%, but still fit, you know. Still pretty good.
I can't complain about someone shooting 58% from the field and has a true shooting percentage of almost 61. I'm okay with that.
Yeah, for sure. It's I agree with you in thinking that his best option is just stay put, re-sign with the Clippers, and just you can't break up him and Lou Williams.
No.
They're so perfect together.
Right. And basically what you need to do is, you know what Steve Ballmer should do? He should come into that negotiation room with a bag, and he should flip it on his head, and then he should say, imagine I'm doing a Pat Riley right now.
Yeah.
Because this could be Harrell is a game changer. We agree that if he leaves, the Clippers are going to be significantly worse, at least on the court next year, right?
Yeah. Oh, he would be a huge loss for the Clippers.
Right.
And the Clippers are very lucky to have Steve Ballmer for a number of reasons. But one of them is he's filthy rich, and I cannot imagine, even if the cap falls and even if they would have been able to stay under the luxury tax and now they won't, I don't think the luxury tax is going to be a deterrent for him. Like, he's just so enormously rich, and he knows he has a championship contender. So if it means re-signing Montrez and... if re-signing Montrez causes them to go over the tax, I don't think he's going to care.
Right. Also, sign him to trade him?
That's possible too, yeah.
We know Ballmer has done it before.
Especially if Kawhi or Paul George leave after 2021.
Oh yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. All right, so Andre Drummond's staying with the Cavs. Montrez is staying with the Clippers.
And the Hornets are getting nobody.
Well, let's go to your boy, Christian Wood.
Yeah, who they once had and didn't retain.
So, before we started recording, I went down memory lane because Christian Wood started his career with the Sixers, and I forgot that he had signed a multi-year contract with them. They waived him approximately 4 months after signing him to that multi-year contract, and they waived him to sign their current general manager, Elton Brand. Fun fact about Christian Wood. He didn't do much in Philly. He only played 17 games in Philly. Didn't do much in Charlotte in 2016-17. Played 13 games, averaged 3 points. Big deal. Was completely out of the league in 2017-18. Then comes plays briefly with the Bucks in 2018-19, comes to the Pelicans, puts up big numbers, almost 17 points, 8 rebounds a game in 8 games. Then the Detroit Pistons get him, and his career takes off. And this year, by far, the best of his career. But it's just been kind of a weird career arc for this guy. Like, he doesn't have the track record of a guy, not even like Andre Drummond, but even a Montrezl Harrell, where you can see the clear progression. And, you know, Montrez was putting up big numbers last year as well. Christian Wood, this is still kind of a mystery box. But, you know, if you're going to have a career year, look at, you know, he moved into the starting lineup for Detroit in February. So he only started 11 games straight at the end of the season. But he averaged 23 points and almost 10 rebounds a game in those 11 starts.
Yeah. Man, nobody saw him coming. Nobody.
Where if you claim every single young player, you're going to get some right.
So what you're saying is that when Troy Brown wins MIP next year, that is not a credit to me?
That one I'll give you.
Okay.
But Gary Trent Jr., I will not.
Well, I mean, hey, you know what? Stay tuned is all I have to say. Stay tuned.
But let's go into Christian Wood.
Yeah.
First, how much money do you think this guy would get in a normal, you know, let's say the cap stays at $109 million. How much money would you feel comfortable paying him?
Probably in the $18 million range.
Oh, okay. That was much more reasonable than I expected from you.
No, yeah, I'm proud. I mean, obviously that's where I want to land. Because here, my argument with him is the lack of sample size.
Right.
Like he played 62 games for Detroit this year.
Mm-hmm.
And that is really the primary, you know, sample size that we've seen of him over the course of a full year. Like if you really want to be creative, you can add the 8 games from New Orleans last year where he also did really well. He averaged 17 and 8. But again, that's just 70 games. That is more or less just one season. And you know, you can't ignore one season. Hell, that's why I'd be willing to pay $18 million. But if he was coming in and saying, you know what, I want a max for starting 12 games and having a sample size of 70 games where I just balled out, yeah, I would be skeptical. Now, if that contract ends up being worth $19 million, I mean, if that was the deal breaker, then I would be flexible. But if I could get him in the $18 million range or even less than that, I'm all for it. And given the current cap situation that we just know nothing about, it's really just a coin flip. I will say this. What's intriguing is not just the raw stats. It really is, even though they are extremely impressive. Like, he is the king of per 36 numbers these days.
Yeah.
You know, ignoring Giannis and all that. But, like, a guy who isn't established, then he's a guy who's just a king of those numbers. But it's the way that he moves, Brian. It's the way that he can take that one dribble from outside the three-point line and fairly far out and then finish with a dunk. Like, he just covers so much ground and so quickly. And if you play him for the drive, he can spot up and he can shoot 39% from three. Now, at the same time, if you foul him, he converts at a somewhat high rate for a big, like 75% from the free throw line. So you know that the offensive there, he also just takes smart shots. Like, he's not a guy who's going to play outside of the offense. There's a reason he shot almost 57% from the field. He is a reliable offensive option who isn't limited to, you know, 15 feet and in. No, he can hit from the outside. He can do a lot of things. He had a true shooting percentage this year of 66. I mean, that is outstanding. Now, at the same time, he can come in and rebound. He can be an asset on the glass. He can put up a lot of blocks. But again, it all comes down to the small sample size. Do you trust that he can do all these things over the course of 3 or 4 years where he's playing those starter minutes? Because right now, all he's played are in the low 20s.
Right.
How will those numbers look if you sign him and he starts playing 32, 34 minutes a game? Can he duplicate that kind of production? And can he stay as consistent and as effective when he plays against full-time starters all the time? That's mm-hmm. what teams have to figure out.
Yeah. So where do you land on that side of the argument?
Yeah, you know, I don't think he's, you know, a future star necessarily. I mean, I can't rule it out either, because that would just be stupid. But I don't think that's in the cards. I think for him, it's being a very, very good starter. Now, a good starter on a good team, I don't know. Again, sample size. We haven't seen it, so I don't know whether he'll be able to, you know, be highly productive on a good team, or you know, he would get buried because there were better options around him. I don't know. But he, you know, you have a certain baseline with him, which I trust. So at the bare minimum, I would consider him a starter from now on and until he doesn't prove it anymore. I think he's proven it well enough that he's capable of it.
Mm-hmm. So we brought up Charlotte for Drummond and Montrez. What do you think about Charlotte for Christian Wood?
Yeah, no, that makes just so much sense. Also, he just aligns perfectly age-wise with Devontae mm-hmm. and Terry Rozier, as does Montrez, I will say, though. Like, Trez is, what, 2 years older, so it's not, you know, a big issue. But you always...
Yeah, Drummond, too.
And Drummond, too, yeah. That is true. Man, you know, you always forget how young Drummond is.
I know. Yeah, he's been in the league since 2012, but he's only 26. He turns 27 in August, so he's...
That is insane.
In theory, just in the midst of his prime right now?
Yeah. Yeah, and probably would have like 3-4 years more to go.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's insane. If only he was more motivated.
Right.
but no, yeah, I think Wood would be a good gamble for them. And I don't even want to say gamble. It depends on the contract, obviously. But I think he would be a good get. Like, we have ridiculed Charlotte for years because they're just making really weird moves. Like, they found a gem in Graham. You know, Rozier actually panned out, at least so far, which is a very positive for them. I still think the decision to sign him, and with those numbers, that was a gamble. It was just a gamble that ended up paying off. What I would see as somewhat of a safe bet, assuming the contract matches, you know, his perceived production. And I think mm-hmm. he would be a good asset. You're already somewhat familiar with him because he's been on your roster before. So coaching staffs, well, not the entire coaching staff, but at least, you know, some of the front office guys, there are at least some people within the organization that has a familiarity with him and has been keeping track of him, I suppose. So you can fling him in there. He can be your center. He can be your power forward. Like, he's one of those guys who can play either position. So whatever you need or whatever you find in the draft or a free agency down the line, like, you can just kind of incorporate Wood as you please.
Yeah. I guess the question is, what kind of contract could you design to make Detroit... Like, they don't have matching rights on him. He's an unrestricted free agent, right, if I'm remembering correctly.
Right. Yeah.
But, you know, I would assume if... Maybe not. I don't know. If Detroit offered a similar deal, maybe he would stay with them. But actually, I don't know if that's true. Either way, should Detroit want to keep him? And do you think he could be... You know, they got Sekou last year in the draft. Do you think he and Sekou could be their front court of the future together?
Oh, that's a little bit too soon to ask about Sekou, because, you know, he turned 19, I want to say, in December.
Mm-hmm.
So he's just so young. Like, we saw a little bit of him during like the midway of the season. He started peaking up a little bit. So that was really encouraging. Like, I had him 4 on my big board coming in, so I like him a lot. But I'm also, you know, realistic enough to know that at that age, it can go either way and pretty quickly. Like, you need to have the maturity level, and that's one thing that he still lacks. You got to have the work ethic, and you got to have the skill set. And at 19, it's just impossible to say, you know, like, identify it properly. So we'll see. I do think there's logic in doing it. I think there's logic in retaining Christian Wood and trying it out. If anything, you can always trade Wood later on. Like, I don't foresee that he's ever going to be one of those players who gets his contract and just goes, well, I'm okay now. Like, I'm done.
Right.
Like, he scrapped his way for, what, 5 years before he really broke through?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think that scrapping mentality is gone. I mean, I hope for him that he's done scrapping, especially for respect. I actually wrote a piece on that at Forbes a couple months back. But, like, he's a fighter. He's survived in the NBA for a long while. You know, granted, at the end of the bench, most frequently, or most dominantly. But that this dude is wired in a way where he's not going to quit on you. So if you have that mindset, you also have a pretty good understanding of when I sign him to a contract, even if it doesn't work out, for us specifically, he's going to have a certain level of trade value that we can utilize later on. So for if I'm the Pistons, hell yeah, I keep him if I can, and then I figure things out later on.
Yeah. As long as the price doesn't get completely ridiculous.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Like, if he comes in and says, I will not accept anything south of $24 million a year, you just say, well, thank you for the 1 year. We're
right.
Let's part as friends. It's not you, it's me, and all those.
Right.
Those BS lines.
Yeah. So, after Wood, we get into, I don't want to say a bunch of similar players because they're not, but it's just like Harold, Drummond, Wood are young enough that they still have some upside left.
Mm-hmm.
After that, we're getting into some more established veterans who they probably are what they are at this point. I don't think you're going to see a huge late career breakout for any of them with one possible exception. Let's start with Serge Ibaka.
Mm-hmm.
And we can even tie Marc Gasol into this as well, because both of them are free agents for the Raptors. They also, as we talked about in the point guard episode, also have Fred VanVleet as a free agent this summer. So the Raptors could be, you know, and they lost Kawhi and Danny Green last offseason. This could be a big chunk of the rest of that championship core out the door this offseason.
Mm.
Which of the two, or should they try to re-sign both, would you be trying to prioritize if you were Toronto, Mort?
You know, if it came down to choice, I would probably go Ibaka just because he's younger.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't like, you know, not getting both of them back if my plan is to extend the win-now window. Like, that, I feel both of them would be necessary to keep that window open, if you catch my drift.
Yeah, for sure.
But if push came to shove, I would probably see if I can retain Ibaka. Just I right now, I'll argue that Gasol, off of his passing, is a better player, even though he doesn't statistically produce as much as Ibaka does. But he's just such a hub, you know what I mean? Like, he can shoot, he can pass, he can defend. When he wants to, he can rebound, and he can score near the rim, and he can do so many different things. But he's also, what, pushing 35?
Yeah, he is. Let's see. He's looks like he turned 35 at the end of January.
Oh boy. Okay, so he's actually going to be 36.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to make my decision a little bit easier, because at the end of the day, I need someone who, if I'm signing someone to a new contract, I don't think it's going to be like a 1 year deal. If it's a 1 year deal, fine, I'll go with Gasol. But
yeah,
if it's more long term, I gotta prioritize Serge Ibaka.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I do think they're gonna want to keep both guys, and the number of teams that both need bigs and are contenders, and that have cap space, it's Miami, I guess, but they have Adebayo, so I don't think they're gonna be, you know, going too hard for a big this summer or this off season. God, one day I'll get it. And two, again, they're going to save a lot of money for Giannis, so I don't think they're going to be throwing huge offers, huge multi-year offers either way. So would Charlotte appeal to either of these guys? Probably not. They just won a ring last year. Why are they going to go to a rebuilding Hornets team when they could just stay in Toronto if the Raptors are willing to offer them you know, even close to what they're willing to take. And otherwise, you're looking at the mid-level exception. So if you can get above 9 or 10 million, your options are pretty limited if you're either one of them. I do think I agree that they should prioritize Ibaka, but Gasol is really important to that team when you're looking ahead to potential playoff matchups. He's one of the few bigs in the league who can really get under Joel Embiid's skin and figure him out. Like, they don't win that series last year without Marc Gasol, without making that midseason trade.
Right. But at the same time, as long as you just play Joel Embiid when the Sixers are on the road, it's fine. You don't need to concern yourself.
Right. Well, maybe they'll figure that. Maybe this Orlando thing will help Embiid get better on the road, or maybe he won't be as dependent on fans. He'll come back locked in, and then they won't be a total tire fire on the road next year. One can only hope. But even even against Milwaukee too. I mean, Gasol can help wall off the paint against Giannis, and you need as many big bodies as possible to throw at Giannis.
I mean, that's true. So, Serge Ibaka is not the shot blocker he once was. Like, this was a guy who almost averaged 4 blocks a game in 27 minutes, and now it's less than 1 per game because he's just prioritizing proper positioning instead, which, you know, on the surface is really great. That's not a problem. But I will say this, that just off of NBA players alone, if you are a shot blocker, that does inject some fear into your opponent. Right. It just does, because nobody wants to get embarrassed. So I would like to see Ibaka, you know, race up a little bit more frequently to swat those shots away. I mean, he's still got the lift. That seems painfully obvious. I was thinking about this, actually. You know, the Clippers, if Montrezl Harrell is very interested in moving on, do you think you could do, like, a double sign-in trade?
Oh.
And then maybe with the Clippers using their non-tax MLE on, you know, one of Ibaka or Gasol. So basically the Clippers get Ibaka and Gasol.
Yeah. That would be really interesting.
Right? Like, Harrell would go to a place that's not a bad place. Like, the Raptors wouldn't be a bad team. They still have Kyle. They'll still have Fred, even though he's an unrestricted free agent as well. So there's some uncertainty there. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and they pick up guys out of nowhere every single year. I mean, they just go to their trash bin and they pick someone out. I mean, it's amazing. And I mean that in the most positive way imaginable. But you know, Ibaka and Gasol have extended experience with Kawhi for that 1 year because they won a ring. That is extended experience. That is correct. If you win a ring, you have extended experience. I could just see that kind of playing out. That wouldn't shock me.
Yeah. No, that's a really good call. That would be a nice fit for either one of them.
Yeah.
But ultimately, I think, just given the market dynamics, barring a major sign and trade or Toronto just like deciding to move on, I think there's enough incentive for both sides to just run the band back together for one more year, because then we can see what happens with Kyle Lowry as well.
I
think the fact that Toronto was as competitive as they were this year despite losing Kawhi probably forces their hand a little bit too. Like, I, you know, Masai, if they totally fell apart at the trade deadline, Masai probably would have had a fire sale. But the fact they're the number two seed in the East right now, I don't think you're going to get a ton of value for any of those guys in a trade if you re-sign them. But you're definitely not getting any value if they walk out in free agency. So I think there is value in re-signing them just to run this thing back one more time.
Right. In my scenario, by the way, I forgot to mention, because this would be an opportunity for Toronto to get a little bit younger. Like, obviously, yes, you wouldn't be able to get the same sort of talent as Serge Ibaka and Marc Gasol, but then if you get Montrezl Harrell back, and, you know, assuming that you have the money, or you can use the non-taxpayer on Tristan Thompson, Canadian, bring a Canadian home.
That's true.
I mean, then you get a little bit younger.
That's a very fair point. Let's go into a guy I alluded to. You know, most of these guys have probably hit their ceiling. We're on the downslope of their careers. There's one guy in New Orleans who I don't know that that's necessarily the case. Oh. And that is Derek Favors.
Yeah, I know where you're going. Yep, yep.
Definitely going to be a free agent this summer. Yep. Completely unrestricted. Didn't put up huge numbers with the Pelicans this year. Only 9.2 points, 9.9 rebounds in 24.2 minutes per game.
Right.
Hasn't played above 30 since the 2015-16 season. So, was a somewhat clunky fit next to Rudy Gobert in Utah, which is why they ended up moving on from him. I think he is better as a center than a power forward now.
Yes.
But, I mean, he's only 28. He turns 29 in July 15th. So, you know, toward the tail end of his prime, for sure. But, like, I do think if you're looking at, you know, need the bridge between older veteran like Gasol or high fly, or like upside flyer type in Montrez or Christian Wood, Favors is probably the one guy who bridges that gap a bit.
Yeah. I would agree with that. Here's the thing about Favors, right? I think for me, where I'm sitting is he never really developed a reliable jump shot. And for him, that's if there's a one take back that I want for him to basically, at the end of his career, goes, oh, I should have gone back and worked on that particular skill, it should have been shooting, because, you know, the defense, as you brought up, that's down. Like, he's got that down. He's a great rebounder. Like, he's a high-efficiency scorer around the basket. Like, he knows what a good shot is within, like, a certain, you know, when he's within a certain range. He's a shot blocker. He actually moves the ball pretty well. The only reason that he's slightly problematic as a potential suitor for teams is that he doesn't really shoot the ball. So you kind of have to tailor your front court to his tendencies a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the big rub, right? So,
yeah.
I don't know who, like, what team out there that makes the most sense for him.
Right. Yeah, and the tricky thing, I mean, do you think the Pelicans would want him back?
I wouldn't hate it. I mean, look, he obviously is very, very good. And I don't seem to recall, maybe I'm just misremembering, but I don't seem to recall him complaining in the media about role or team success. Did he?
No. And I think, I mean, he missed a ton of time early in the year.
Right.
And the Pelicans' defense was very bad.
Yeah.
And then he came back and it immediately made a huge difference on that end of the court.
Right. Because my thinking is, if he's just one of those guys who is just, he's puts the ego by the door.
Yeah.
Then hell yeah, bring him back as a mentor for Jackson Hayes. At the very least.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, if you want to, you know, he's obviously not the future of the position there.
Right.
I think they would hope that's going to be Jackson Hayes and Zion, of course, but. Yeah, I mean, he can be that stabilizing presence for now. Like, I wouldn't feel good about throwing Jackson Hayes into a 35-minute-per-game role next year.
Right.
So, if you can get... I don't think you signed Derek Favors if you're the Pelicans. I don't think you signed him to, like, a 4-year deal or anything like that. But if you can get him back on a 1-year deal or a 2-year deal, sure, why not?
I have a question here. Mm-hmm. Is Derek Favors the most obvious candidate for the Clippers to replace Harrell if Harrell leaves?
Ooh.
Because when you think about it, right, the Clippers have a lot of shot takers, mm-hmm. and presumably Marcus Morris is going to stay on, and he's a shot taker as well. Now, with Montrez moving on, you take, you know, 19-ish points away from the equation. But those guys that they have already, they can make up for it. Like, they have scores. So now you bring Favors in and you tell him, you know what? You know, when you score, make it opportunistic. Like, putbacks, you know, tip dunks, points in transition, alley-oops, that sort of thing. And otherwise, just rebound, defend with everything that you've got, which was... Harrell's, I don't want to say it was Achilles' heel. I actually think Harrell did somewhat well defensively. But obviously his lack of size was a problem. Favors mm-hmm. is a behemoth. I know he's listed at just 6'9", which is just 2 inches, you know, taller, but he's 260. And he's agile. He's an agile 260. So wouldn't he be like obvious to put in there?
I'm going to counter with a question. Yeah. Does it even necessitate Montrez leaving? Like, what if they could just use their non-tax MLE if they can stay under the tax line? What if they used that on Derek Favors, had him as their starting center, and still have Montrez and Lou off the bench?
Oh, man, you're taking my man Supach off the starting role. Okay. No, I'll probably do that. I love Supach, by the way. So, like, I would almost want them to trade him to see what they can get because he's young. Like, he should fetch something good. And I think he's earning like $8 million, right?
Yeah, I don't remember the exact contract he signed, but
no, but it's not like it's not pennies. Like it's
No.
Right. Yeah. So you can actually get something of value back just because his contract is large enough to identify certain players.
Right.
Right. So if you bring Derek Favors in as the starting center, you keep Harrell and then you flip Subach for maybe a younger guard. I kind of like where this is going.
Yeah. I mean, the Clippers might not need to do anything, but if they just, you know, are saying Zubach isn't, he's still like a little green behind the ears, he still needs to get more experience, we can't rely on him as our starter and a potential championship run, Derek Favors just has more experience. So that's just where my head was at there, but not saying it would definitely happen.
No, but it's an interesting.
I guess I'm not even sure. The problem for Favors is like he might be too old to really be of interest to Charlotte.
Yes,
maybe not. But I mean, compared to some of the other options that we went through earlier, and again, like Charlotte's the one team that really needs a bit. Like I don't think Detroit is going to go after a 29-year-old Derek Favors.
Oh, no.
Phoenix, Miami, Atlanta doesn't need him. It's, you know, I think it's Pelicans or it might be like Pelicans or bust. And if you're talking about getting more than the mid-level exception, but if he's willing to take the mid-level exception, then that opens up a world of possibilities for him.
Right. It really does. And I mean, look at what centers got last year.
Yeah. Yeah, like Robin Lopez got the room exception, right?
Yep. So did Rashawn Holmes.
And Cantor. Yeah, so if he's willing to take something like that and say, hey, I'm just, you know, I'm ready. I've been in the league for 10 years now? Yeah, wow. So yeah, maybe he goes, I mean, he's another guy like Andre Drummond. Mm-hmm. He's been in the league for way longer than you would think based on his age. So yeah, maybe he says like, I've been in the league 10 years. I'm in ring chasing mode now. Or I'm willing to go sign for less money so I could actually have a real shot at a ring.
Oh man. The Bucks.
If they don't bring back Lopez?
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be good. Or Dallas?
We've actually talked about him going to Dallas before. We brought up Favors to Dallas scenarios before. You're right. I don't know what I was thinking. This is the time that the stars align for us.
It might be.
Yep. I'm sold.
If he is willing to take the mid-level exception, that he would be one of the most interesting free agents of the offseason, I think.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And the casual fans might be like, what? Are you kidding? But I mean, you have to look at what he gives you on both ends. Like, yes, he's not going to give you 18 points a game. He's just not. That's not who he is. But that doesn't matter. Like, look, he averaged 10 rebounds per game in 24 minutes. He is going to get you a ton of boards. And he's going to get you shot blocking. He's going to get you interior defense. And he's not, you know, hugely clunky. I mean, obviously, he's not Giannis. He's not going to go out and switch on to point guards. But there is a level of mobility there that is a little bit more surprising, maybe, than of guys typically of his stature, you know, 6'9", 6'10", 260. You know, those guys are a little bit, they're a little bit rough around the edges. They don't move around all that well. Fabers is a little bit different. I'm not saying he's some athletic marble, but he's sneaky.
I just came up with two other nightmare scenarios. Both of them are nightmare scenarios. Yes. One, the Warriors. Huh. Two, the Rockets.
Well, I mean, do the Rockets want that? Don't they have a rule that if you're over 6'9", you're persona non grata?
Maybe he could be their one exception.
The Warriors, though. Because you're obviously here assuming that the guys are going to come back next year. This is under the scenario that you have. You roll out Steph, Clay, Wiggins, Draymond, and then obviously Favors at the five, which, good Lord, the defense on that unit.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he would have to take a significant cut because the Warriors are definitely going to be in the tax, correct, no matter where it comes in, where the cap comes in. So he would have to take the taxpayer mid-level, which will be lower, like four-ish million lower than the non-taxpayer. But if he's, you know, he could be, like, the Warriors would be right back in the title picture next year if Derek Favors ends up going there.
Just get Andrew Wiggins to basically donate $3 or $4 million of his salary.
Right, yeah.
Because apparently you can make him promise anything.
That's true, yeah. Let's briefly touch on two other guys, Mort. One, Hassan Whiteside. I think it's probably safe to say, I mean, with Yusuf Nurkic coming back and Zach Collins coming back as well, Portland doesn't need Whiteside next year as much as they did this year.
Right.
Do you think they would have interest in bringing him back at all?
Yeah, you've asked me this question before, and I'm going to reiterate myself here. I understand that there are certain issues with him, but look at his production.
Yeah.
You can't ignore that level of production. I mean, look, it's going to take time for Yusuf Nurkic to get back and in full swing of things. It's just not that easy that, hey, I'm healthy, I'm back again, and I'm just as productive as always because I don't need any adjustment period. That's not how it works. It's going to take time. The same for Zach Collins. Zach Collins played, three games this year?
Yeah, three or four. I don't remember off the top of my head.
I just remember it happened in Dallas. That's it. And so he basically had no reps at all this year. So for him to come back, you know, that's a lot of time away from the court. I mean, already by now, if he went down right at the start of the season, which was in October, you know, we're coming up somewhat soonish on that being a year.
Mm-hmm.
You can't rely on that. You can't rely on those guys coming back and being productive immediately. So I would keep Whiteside for a year and then let the two other guys just come off the bench or maybe be spot starters and just see where they're at. You know, have some insurance here. And besides, you know, Whiteside, I understand that he's not, you know, engaged, but why is it that we look at him and we penalize him for his lack of commitment, but at the same time, you know, we don't really go at Drummond as hard? What are the major differences between the two?
I would say Whiteside is more like openly mopey on the court.
Right.
Like Drummond checked out this year for sure, but I think this is the first time that I ever remember seeing him check out in extended time.
Well, Pistons fans have said that this is a theme.
Yeah. I mean, maybe it's because Whiteside is just more vocal too. I mean, he put Coach Spo on like blast repeatedly. Yeah. About, you know, he's just like, look at my production. How can you bench me for Bam Adebayo? And then now we see what Bam Adebayo has become.
Right. No, I agree with that. But I mean, at the end of the day, you're still looking at a guy who averaged, what's, was it 15, 16 or 14? And 3 blocks.
Yeah. No, it's a fair point. And I mean, my concern with Whiteside would be the attitude. Like, I know some Portland fans and some Miami fans are just like totally out on the guy, and I get it.
Right.
But as you said, the production speaks for itself. Could he set screens better and harder? Like, could he play harder? Of course. Yes. But there are very few guys you can't say that about. The question would be, is he willing to come off the bench if that's what it takes? Is he willing to share minutes with Collins and with Nurkic? If so, great. And maybe Damian Lillard, like maybe being around Dame and, you know, having that experience, maybe Dame's just like such a great teammate that he's like, yeah, you know what? I'm willing to sacrifice now when I wasn't earlier in my career.
Right.
But if he's not, then this is, you know, we talked about a lot of good options for Charlotte in this episode. I think Hassan Whiteside would be the one landmine that I'm trying to avoid if I'm the Hornets.
Yeah, no, I get that. And I don't, but let me play this scenario out. So Portland this year, they couldn't duplicate the success of last year. I don't think it's fair to put that on Whiteside, as I've seen some Blazers fans do, because...
Yeah, there were a ton of injuries. Hood, Collins, Nurkic, no way.
Exactly. Now imagine his mood on a winning team, on a winning Portland Blazers team.
Yeah.
I'm just not that concerned, honestly. I mean, we've heard it time and time again that the Portland Trailblazers have one of the best chemistry locker rooms in the entire league. Like, Dame has that entire team, you know, in the palm of his hand. And that's a good way. That almost insinuates that I mean something negative. I really don't, because Dame is a good guy.
You know, you're not going to call him selfish or entitled?
Oh, yeah. Someone did that, right?
Yeah.
That was bad. I don't remember who did it, but I remember him just quote-tweeting that guy and going, no, I'm not.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, and every NBA writer was also like, no, this is stupid. Yeah.
No, I completely hear you, because everything you know, you hear of Dame, just not just in the media, but also what you hear privately, is he's top dollar. He's not just Dame dollar, he's top dollar. I have no problem putting... you know, my faith in Lillard during these times. I mean, and honestly, at some point, I think it's just such a difficult way to just kind of put down Whiteside all the time. Every time we talk about Whiteside, it's about, oh, can Dame reel him in? Like, I don't think this is a guy who needs to be reeled in. Sure, he's mopey. Okay. But is that the end of the world? If he doesn't alienate his teammates, and from all accounts, he didn't alienate his teammates in Portland, at least from what I've seen, then what's the issue?
Yeah, no, it's a very fair question.
The issue here for me is contractual value compared to on-court production. Like, if he signs a contract and he doesn't live up to it, now that's a problem. If he signs a very reasonable deal and he copies the numbers that he had this year, like 16 points, 14 rebounds, and 3 blocks, but does it on a budget contract, then you're not even allowed to complain. That's just good.
Right.
That's just downright good.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And the other guy that I want to hit on is Tristan Thompson, because he also had a career year this year, 12 points, 10 rebounds, playing for a bad Cavs team. Similarly limited to a lot of the other guys that we've talked about today. Not as good defensively as many of them, but... passable on that end, but offensively he's not, again, not the unicorn skill set. He did hit his first three this year. He went 9 of 23 from deep after not hitting a single three in his first 8 seasons. But again, I don't think you're gonna bank on him developing into a high volume 3-point shooter, or you shouldn't if you hope to win at any consistent rate. Who should be interested in Tristan Thompson this summer? And do you think he would get more than the mid-level?
Well, I mean, obviously Philly, because look, here's a guy, right, who for 9 years or 8 seasons did not make a 3-point shot. And then in year 9, there we go, he hits 9 of them. So obviously, I mean, you take him into practice and you say, go talk to Ben. And you
right.
Ben, you're his shadow. Come on. Oh, boy.
Yeah. Hey, they need another insurance policy, et cetera. Al Horford didn't work out. We got to get another one.
And another one. And another one. God. That's how it works. Yeah. No.
Please no.
What team? So this is going to sound really impolite, but there's not a single team that really stands out as needing a Tristan Thompson, because I don't think you ever need a Tristan Thompson. I think he's nice to have. Yeah. I think he's, you know, a very reliable big if you get him for the right price. I mean, the dude did average 12 and 10 over the course of a season. That's not bad. That's a double-double center right there. But at the same time, he's just not that influential, I want to say, on the basketball court. Mm. Like, teams will openly ignore him when he has the ball, you know, 10 feet away from the basket.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of a problem. And he's not one of those guys who are superbly efficient. He used to be when he played with LeBron, but he doesn't anymore. And now he's just kind of a middling efficiency. And I don't know. I don't think there's a huge market for him.
The one team I would be worried about is the Lakers.
Yeah.
Like, if they don't bring back Dwight or JaVale.
I mean, he knows LeBron's there. Yeah.
Flex the muscle, use the taxpayer mid-level on him, or the I don't even think they'll be they're going to be under the tax. It'd be the non-taxpayer. Yeah. They probably wouldn't even need to use the whole thing.
Yeah, and he shares an agent. Rich Paul is his agent too.
Yeah.
And Rich Paul and LeBron did give him the 5-year, $82 million deal in 2015. Good
Lord. Right. So it's time to pay them back a little bit.
LeBron is like, I need bodies, man.
Well, I mean, you know, I think if you're bringing interest in, you got to have a guy, you're the front court partner, similar to what we were talking about with Drummond and Montrez earlier. Like, your front court partner has to have very specific skill set. Well, Anthony Davis has that exact skill set that you would want. And again, I think the Lakers and the Clippers are both, as long as LeBron, Kawhi, Paul George are all there, they're both going to be eyeing each other the entire time and saying, we need to build our team specifically, to beat everyone else, but like definitely to beat the other LA team.
Right.
And the one weakness for the Clippers right now is their lack of size. If you add in Tristan Thompson, LeBron James, Anthony Davis, okay, there you go. Let's go.
Right. I mean, I got to bring it up. Spacing.
Yeah.
I understand LeBron is a better shooter than he used to be. I also acknowledge that Anthony Davis has become more of a stretch player than he was in the past. Having said that, you know, neither of those guys are snipers.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't really have, you know, guys on that roster who are capable of playing 32, 35 minutes a game while being these very high influential shooters. Like, who is that guy? So if you throw Tristan Thompson to the mix, who is a good player, I just outlined that before as well. Sure, you get an upgrade in talent, but is it going to be worth the fit from a spacing perspective?
It's a fair question. I think the thing I would counter with is just because he's starting during the regular season doesn't mean he necessarily would be in the playoffs.
Right.
Or would be overlapping with Davis and LeBron as much in the playoffs. Like, I think once the playoffs start and once we get into the later rounds, we're going to see more of James at the 4, Davis at the 5 than we did during the regular season. Yeah. They just, you know, rightfully wanted to preserve Anthony Davis and didn't think he could hold up to playing the 5 full time for 82 games, which makes sense. So I think whichever big they bring in, and maybe they just re-sign JaVale and Dwight because they were, you know, they worked out, they were cheap, they were good insurance policies, and they filled the job well. But I think, like, whatever big they bring in basically just needs to fill that role of just don't get in the way, rebound, block shots, put back dunks, we're not going to run plays for you, you're not posting up, but you just need to basically be a warm body in there so Anthony Davis doesn't break down by the time we get to the playoffs.
Is Tristan that guy, though? Is he athletic enough to... Because you bring up some good points, but when you look at the physical profiles of both Dwight and JaVale, You know, they mm-hmm. are still at their age, superbly athletic.
Yeah.
You know, Tristan, coming out of college, that was actually one of the things that people relied on. That was him becoming a tremendous shot blocker and being, you know, one of those athletic big men. And then for some reason, that just never panned out in the NBA. Like, yeah. he was way more a below-the-rim guy than above it, and never a good shot blocker. So I have to wonder if that criteria, which I agree with that you just set up, applies to Tristan at all.
Yeah. No, that's a fair question. And I don't have a good answer for you. But I think the thing working against Tristan is, one, I mean, the Cavs just traded for Andre Drummond, so I don't think they will have much interest in bringing Tristan back if Drummond stays as well, because they also have Kevin Love in the mix still. So I think they're probably going to be looking at, I mean, I'm sure they would love to pull off a sign and trade if they could. Mm. But yeah, I mean, you have a fair point. Like, I don't know what the market is going to be for that this summer, especially if it's not using some sort of exception.
I mean, hell, the market for him in 2015 wasn't great. Remember, he sat yeah. out a part of training camp?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
I mean, and still, it was only because of the Rich Paul, you know, connection that he got that money.
Right.
I don't think NBA teams have ever been specifically high on Thompson when you think about it. That's partly why I'm reasoning why he's only played on for one team.
Mm-hmm. No, it's all fair points. Yeah. And I mean, another thing working against him is, like, we've talked about eight guys in detail today. We also have Aaron Baines, Mason Plumlee, Robin Lopez, Enes Kanter, other centers as well. The center market is very full.
Yeah.
This offseason.
It's the anti-point guard field.
It really is. I mean, Nerlens Noel is in there too. Like, you can probably get a pretty good, at least like an adequate center for not all that much money. Yeah. So for a guy like, do you spend $10 million or $8 million or $9 million on Tristan Thompson when you can get some of these other guys for a third of the price?
No, you do not. But I mean, look, it's all a moot point because Hassan Whiteside is going to go to the Lakers anyway. So that's not a FA destination
for
Thompson.
Oh, please no.
You could see that happening though, right?
Oh, for sure.
Because Davis is one of those guys, like, I'm a power forward. I don't know why. So many players in the league are like, I'm a power forward. Even Wendell Carter isn't, like, who's clearly a center. It's like, I'm a forward. Yeah. Players just don't want to play center. So,
right.
I mean, bringing Hassan in to just do center stuff, like, in the regular season, you can just kind of say to Davis, okay, fine. We hear you. Go back to playing the four for the regular season. And then in the playoffs, oopsie doopsie, Hassan Whiteside only plays for 21 minutes. We're sorry.
But yeah, but then does he nuke their chemistry at the worst possible time?
LeBron's there. I don't think he dares.
That's true. Well, that is going to wrap up our free agent series, and just in time for news about the NBA season to resume. So we'll actually have real basketball to talk about soon, but between now and then, you know, we'll keep you posted, of course, on the latest on the season when we hear it. It should be later this week. And then we'll get into a lot of the dynamics about what to expect when we return. So please keep following us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bios, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We are being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
You too, Brian. I'm just realizing, so after the league has started up play again and teams get bounced, do we have to go through all the Bye Felicias one more time, plus free agency previews?
We'll see how... we have to see what the structure is. Like, we might not have time for Bye Felicias.
This year, man. This effing year. Oh, God. Take care, Beth.
You too.